The blue screen of death. The blue screen of death. All PC users know the blue screen of death. Well, it's blue. And when it happens, your machine dies. But you see, I'm self-employed, so I don't have an IT department. And that's one of the main reasons why I ended up buying a Mac. I liked the simplicity and the sophistication of OS X. I don't have any of the problems that I used to have with a PC. It doesn't crash. I don't have the blue screen of death anymore.
The best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah. Join me today. He's more calming than chamomile, more soothing than ASMR. We call him the Sigh Guy. Lewis Wallace is here.
The Sigh Guy. That's great.
Also with us, he's known for his Apple books and riding the bike with a huge front wheel and a tiny back one. Leander Caney is here.
It's one of my they actually sell those across the bay, penny farthings.
They do. Really do. I believe you.
What are they called?
Well, these are called penny farthings, but
penny farthings.
It's not penny farthing. What am I? Yeah, it is.
It's called a penny farthing bicycle. It's probably like the two guys that invented it back in like the 1800s. I'm guessing. And of course, you got to have a monocle when you're riding down the streets. You know,
right.
With one of those,
a bowler hat.
Looking down on everyone, all the peasants below you. You really should get one of those, Leonard. That would be really funny.
It would
ride
actually.
Now
I want one.
Let's get a Kickstarter.
Definitely. You should get like an electric one, so it's easy to ride around.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But how do you get up onto one of those? That's the question.
I don't know. I think you have to sort of run and jump.
Oh, so you can get on one without having a friend to help you up, push you up on top of it. That kind of makes sense. Yeah, so you kind of like prop it up, and then there's like a step on the little tiny wheel in the back, and then you kind of jump right up on there, right?
I guess.
And the guys who've had one a long time, they can do that and not even spill their tea, so they still have the tea on the plate, and they're sipping it as they're riding. So that's what takes practice. Anyway, we digress. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got to move on past the farthings, whittle bloops, bicycle. Into the Apple news, because there's a lot to talk about. You may be wondering, here it is. Let's see here. It's what's the date today? Oh, today's we're recording this on the 23rd. Where is the Apple event? Where is the October Apple event? That's what we're asking. And what about this 16-inch MacBook Pro? You may have already seen the images that leaked out in the last week, and it doesn't look like we expect it to look. So we're going to talk about all that. Also, we're going to tell you why 2020 will deliver Apple's most impressive hardware in years. We got a lot of exciting stuff on the way. And shout out to the guy who asked me, hey, what happened to Under Review or virtually any of the other segments that you guys used to do on the show? Because they're literally all gone. And I thought to myself, he's got a great point. We haven't done a segment besides just straight news in a long time. I don't know why. But we're going to do Under Review this week, and we've got lots of products to tell you about. So stay tuned for that before we dive into the show. Let me give a quick and hearty thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace.com/cultcast. Do you need a website? Do you have a business and you still don't have a website? Maybe you're getting ready to start a business. Maybe you are trying to promote your skill set to the masses. You want to have a single one-page impactful website where you can display your artwork or a large immersive video, or just links to your social media. If you're a IT or a web professional, you know you got to have a website. And you could sell products and services of all kinds if you decide to. Squarespace gives you everything that you need to have virtually any kind of site that you want. But the best part is it looks like it was built by Apple's designers. It's polished, it's beautiful, it's easy to use, easy to set up, it's intuitive, and yet it's ultra uber powerful. You won't believe how much stuff is fully customizable without knowing how to do any code whatsoever. You can just use their drag and drop system and fine tune everything: fonts, colors, positions. They have these little things called web blocks. You can move them all over, and then poof, your website will be up and running, and you'll look like the polished guy. You'll look like the professional guy. Everyone's gonna want to come to your party. I was doing my Jeff Goldblum there. How did you like that? And then when I visit your website again and again and again and again. And you can get started at squarespace.com/cultcast. Get set up with a free trial. Build a website. see how you like it. And if you want to keep what you have at the end of your free trial, you can use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll save 10% off your first order. You'll win because you'll have a beautiful website that you'll love. We'll win because you'll be supporting one of our longest running sponsors. So we're really grateful to Squarespace for sticking with us. And it's a win-win-win scenario. Squarespace.com/CULTCAST. Use offer code CULTCAST at checkout. Okay. First things first. Here's your first glimpse of the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Or not. That was the clever, quippy headline at Colta Mac. Because we got an image of the 16-inch MacBook Pro, which caused a lot of feathers to be ruffled on Twitter because it looks so much like the current MacBook Pro that people thought it was a fake. And it kind of sounded like, before we started recording later, you thought it was a fake too. Am I right?
Well, I thought it was hard to discern a difference between this you know, purported 16-inch machine and the current 15-inch Mac Pro, especially when you put the two icons side by side. I mean, you got to look closely to see the changes.
You got to adjust your monocle to see the changes. I agree, but they are there, and I will discuss some of them in just a moment. First, I want to give credit to the French blog that published this. I don't have the name of it here.
Mac Generation.
Is it here? But it should be Mac Generation.
Mac Generation. Is it in here? Did I just miss it? I'm glad that you guys knew it. Anyway, so they're the ones that published the icon. It was buried within a beta of Mac OS Catalina. And a lot of people started saying, oh, this is clearly a fake. This isn't real. But I did some research. I think it is real. And this was also affirmed by Joe Rosignol over at Mac Rumors, who dug through the beta and also said that the images, the icons, are real. And when you look at the icon, at least to me, it's very clear that it has thinner bezels.
Well, that's clear.
That the screen has thinner bezels?
Yeah, that's the only difference, really, right?
Well, I think the other thing that is absent, which I thought would be there for sure, is the rounded corners of the screen, so a liquid Retina display, so it just has a regular, like, rectangular display. And other than that, yeah, it looks pretty much exactly the same. The screen looks slightly larger, but one astute Twitter user pointed out it looks like there's actually an escape key. And I know that you're scoffing, that, but if you look at the icon, you can actually kind of see it there.
You can't. That's complete baloney. It's just it's such wishful thinking.
It is clear as day.
No, when you it's look not.
At the icon, it couldn't be any more obvious unless
I'm looking at it right now.
Tim Cook himself whispered, "Escape key, y'all." It's right there. Look at the upper left. There's a little tiny line between the button and the touch bar itself. In fact, I think they have them on both sides. So it looks like to me they're either going to give you the option to get rid of the touch bar, which I don't think is going to happen, or they're going to put a real button on the left and then the Touch ID button on the right, and then the touch bar is going to be centered between those two buttons. That's my working theory.
Okay.
You can't see the gap. You can't see the
gap. You
can
see there's like a little white highlight there where, you know,
about.
You said that the gap around the escape could be, but it's also present on the right-hand side too.
Well, I just gave you my theory that explains that whole thing.
But it doesn't look as though they're a part of the keyboard. It looks as though it's on top, above the keyboard, those highlights.
Exactly. That's exactly where the touch bar is. You've just proved my point.
Well, it looks like it's a touch bar. You cannot discern a separate escape key. You cannot discern.
But you can't. Okay. True or false, though, there is a small white gap on the touch bar area between the left-hand part of the touch bar and the part in the middle. Can you see that part at least?
Well, you can see some highlight, yeah. But,
okay, so there you go. So I guess that's my question is, what is that? Because clearly there's a touch bar, but there's a gap between the touch bar and two button-looking things on both sides of the touch bar.
Well, I don't know. I'm zooming in. It could be. I don't know. You can just see the highlights. You can't see what they're sandwiching, what's between them, or what's either side of them. You can't. You just can't.
You know what's clear, though, is people are going to be riveted by this conversation of us describing. Like, just actually describing.
Well, I thought
it
was funny because it's like, oh, my God, you know, this is like one of the features that everyone wants to have back. And it's just total wishful thinking that you can see an escape key here.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that there's something there. I don't know if it's an escape key, but if it's not an escape key, I don't know what it would be. Because we have the Touch ID button on the right, so there's got to be something there.
It's a but, arm. It's a really cheesy arm inside sticker.
I'm going cross-eyed staring at it, man. I can't tell what that is at all.
Right. Leander, you don't wear glasses, do you, Leander?
Yeah, I got big, thick...
Okay, so I'm the only guy here that doesn't need glasses.
No, really.
That's all I got to say.
You're pulling
show
the,
off.
Yeah, pulling the 2020 ice card.
Yeah, I think one of my eyes might even be 1520. So, Whoa. Look, all I'm saying is I got eyes like a gall darn bald eagle. So I can spot that gap from... I'm looking at it right now. It's probably 6 feet away from me, and I can see it. It's
anyway, this is all academic there. Because it's not going to be. We're not getting it anytime soon.
Well, that's the question now, isn't it? So if you missed our last show, we talked about how every year Apple has their, or every quarter Apple has their financial events. Actually, I don't know if it's every quarter or just the third quarter. They have their financial events on a Tuesday. And in years past, the only times that where they have moved the financial call, which is next week, the only times they have moved it from a Tuesday to a Wednesday is when they've had a hardware announcement in the same week. So the hypothesis was, well, clearly there must be an event scheduled for Monday the 28th because they moved their financial call from Tuesday to Wednesday. Now, there could be another reason they have moved their financial call, but historically speaking, that's why they do it. So, but we don't have an announcement yet. So here we are on the 23rd. We're 5 days. Let's see here. Yes, there's no way they can have. There's no way they can have an event next week, unless they move the events to the end of the week or something, which would be weird.
It's too late. The invitations should have gone out already.
Yeah, they should have gone out. But so was it Mac Rumors that posted all of the October events that have happened in the last 9 years?
Yeah, on their Twitter feed. Yeah, they had a list of all the dates for the last. For the last 9 years.
So let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So in the last... Okay, that was... Never mind. I was like, why does it look like there's 10 here? Because we're counting 2019. So in the last 9 years, or in the last 8 years, I should say, we've had 6 hardware events in October. So, and at the end of October. So one took place October 30th, so it wouldn't be outside of precedent for them to do one at the very end of October. Well, I think they have to do something.
When would the invites have to go out then to make that?
Tomorrow. They'd have to go out tomorrow.
Well, it's next Wednesday, right? The 30th?
Well, they could do one on Thursday, or they could do one on Friday, November 1st. Although I don't think they would want to do one on a Friday because it wouldn't get as much press. So I think if anything, they'd have to do it on the 31st, which is next Thursday, which means by the time you hear this, the invitations may have already gone out. And the golden envelope will be sitting in Leander Caney's inbox. I've got a golden ticket.
Well, they're not going to do it on Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not going to do it on the 1st, are they? Because that's the day that Apple TV Plus launches.
Yeah, and plus the 1st is a Friday. So that would be a bad marketing move.
Yeah, well, so they could move this to November. Raft of press releases next week.
Okay, look, but let's just think about this rationally. So we know that they have the Mac Pro that has to get launched, right? And they said it was coming in the fall. So unless something's happened and they're pushing that out, and the XDR display, unless something's happened and it's not going to be ready for fall or it's been pushed out, they have to announce it with an event. They're not going to just release that on their website. There's no way they're going to release that on their website and just say, oh, okay, you can go buy the Mac Pro now. They're going to have an event. Don't you guys think?
I would have thought so, but...
Right.
Yeah.
They can't just soft release it, and they can't soft release a MacBook Pro with a larger screen. They can't. That doesn't make
they
any
could.
Sense.
What was it that they... What was it that they... I guess it was AirPods 2 that they just sent out a press release. I mean, they did 4 of them last year, right? 4 different products? But I guess you're saying these upcoming ones are two substantial of upgrades, huh?
Well, the Mac Pro is a brand new product, pretty much. It's completely different than anything we've ever seen before. So, yeah, they got to do something.
With an incredibly small market, right?
Yeah, but a very high price tag. So, and then let's just say from the MacBook Pro perspective, if it were just a hardware update, I'd say, okay, they could just release this on their website. But if they're going to give it a bigger screen and an all-new keyboard, now... The keyboard they may not promote heavily, although I would imagine they will, because they want people to know that it's not going to have problems anymore.
It's not the crappy one.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's a tough thing, though. Like, oh, hey, this one's really good.
Exactly. They have to promote it without admitting guilt, right?
Yeah,
so they have to promote its benefits without saying the last one. We acknowledge the last one was terrible. which is tricky. A tricky thing to do. But that's why I don't think with a new keyboard and a new larger display and who knows what else is going to be built in, they can't just release that on their website. That doesn't make any sense. That's not a good smart marketing maneuver, in my opinion, in my expert marketing opinion.
Phil Schiller, Fun and Elijah's here.
There you go.
What about, is it November event? Could it bleed into November?
I think it could, yeah. If anything else, maybe something's not ready and they have to push it out. Because you got to remember, Ming-Chi Kuo also said we're getting a new MacBook Pro by the end of this year with the better scissor keyboard. So he could be wrong. And of course, he reads the tea leaves in the supply chain. So maybe Apple changed something. Maybe something happened. I always recall the stories that we heard about the iPhone launching and how chaotic it was right up until they were going on stage to announce it. Things can go wrong or things could not work out right up until the moment they're about to announce it. So who knows? Who knows what's going on? But I still think we're getting a hardware event sometime between now and or in November. We've got to get something. I don't think the Apple could go the entire fall without having a hardware event and just do a soft release. They got to announce all their products. They got to get people hyped up for the holiday season. That's one of the reasons why they have this in October. It precedes the holiday buying season. Everyone's getting ready to buy their presents and stuff. Well, and Black Friday, they got to get people juiced.
Yeah, right. It's like, well, they're already running late. I mean, they should really have done it in September if they were trying to get the holiday buying season. But
what? I don't know. I think things really kick on like end of October, early November is when people start getting their buying juices flowing. You know what I'm saying? like, oh yeah, I'm going to get myself a TV. I'm going to get myself a new MacBook Pro. Like they start thinking about all the money they want to spend at the end of the year. I don't know. So I do think it's weird that we don't have a hardware event scheduled yet, but I still have hope that we're going to get something. I don't think that we're going to be able to go the entire fall without getting something, if only because of the Mac Pro, which we know confirmed is coming
this
fall.
It, yeah.
Apple said it's coming this fall, and they can't do that without giving us an event, I don't think. But we'll see. By the time you've heard this, we could have already had that golden ticket sent out, in which case, we just wasted 20 minutes of your time.
Just 20 minutes? Oh, well.
Well, including the start of the show and all that other stuff, maybe 30. But, you know, if you listen to this show for any length of time, you know that happens quite regularly. So let's move forward from 2019 to 2020. So we got a Bloomberg article this week about all the impressive hardware that Apple's going to be releasing in 2020. It's supposed to be a big year. And alongside big upgrades for iPhone, Apple Watch, and Mac, Apple is expected to deliver its first augmented reality glasses. What will those do for me, you ask? Well, we'll get there. Just stay tuned. It's been 2 years since Apple introduced a major phone redesign, too, and we know that they're going on 3-year cycles now. So almost certainly, well, I would say with great confidence, we could say that we'll be getting a redesigned iPhone next year as well. And plus, the Apple Watch hasn't changed virtually at all since it was introduced. We've gotten some features included in the newer models. Lots of great features. But the way it looks has been unchanged. So we'll talk about that as well. And then, let's see here. Oh, I lost my place in the story. Okay, so yeah. Big upgrades. Let's start with big things for iPhone and Mac, Leander.
This all right, yeah, all yeah. You. So this 2020 iPhone refresh reportedly will bring new form factors, packing a, quote, much beefier processor. The phone's new rear-facing 3D camera will greatly improve the augmented reality experience, and it will also likely be Apple's first smartphone with 5G. And we'll probably also like to see our first Mac running Apple's custom ARM chip. And so, I don't know, you know, new form factor for the phone? What do you think of that?
I'm ready for them to do something drastic. I'm talking smaller notch, bigger screen, maybe edge-to-edge screen. What do you think about that, Lewis?
Well, I think they already call it an edge-to-edge screen. Edge-to-edger?
There's a whole lot of edge going on. A whole lot of edge going on this phone. I'm looking at it right now.
Well, what about one of those curvy screens that folds all the way, you know, curves around?
I wouldn't mind that at all. I think that's a pipe dream, probably, but
isn't this the one that's supposed to look more like the iPhone 4 or 5? iPhone 5.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So they're going to be, according to the rumor, returning to, in my opinion, one of the most beloved designs that, that the iPhone has ever had, with that flat looking phone with the chamfered edges all around the edges. You remember the stainless steel band that went all the way around? I thought that was one of the most beautiful iPhones ever made. And I really like the ones that we're on now, but I kind of preferred that other design a little bit more. It kind of has like a retro, I don't know, like a 50s, 60s era design to it. It kind of feels mid-century, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's it would stand out from a sea of things that look exactly like the current model, right?
Absolutely. And then you get that 5G in there, which 5G is in its preliminary stages at this point, but I saw some videos of people testing 5G on 5G phones where 5G was available. I'll let you give you a moment to just scramble that sentence. And the speeds were wild, wacky speeds. Speeds that I don't even see sometimes on my fiber network here at my house. I was seeing Wi-Fi speeds upwards of like 1,250 megabits per second, which is... That's real fast.
And I know you're afraid of this. So did you see them? Were they like foaming at the mouth as they did this? Or it was all all their hair fall out immediately? Or
no, but in preparation for watching the video, I covered myself in aluminum foil just to watch the review.
Because
you don't know. We don't have any science that shows how much 5G signal can be transmitted over through the camera and then outside your computer screen when you're watching the review video. And, you know, I don't want to be glowing at the end, but I will tell you this. I keep my phone in my back pocket a lot. Once I get 5G, I don't know if I'm going to do that anymore without wearing some lead underpants. I don't even know if they make, do they make lead underpants?
Maybe they probably do.
There you go. That's actually a really good product idea. iPhone 11.
What happens when you fall off your rollerblades though into the canal? I mean, you're just going to get dragged to the bottom.
Oh,
I think about that.
Touche. Well, it will have a emergency floating deploy mechanism that you can press. Well, this is going to take some serious engineering.
Your little water wings, you know, that automatically inflate.
And we'll probably have to build in like some kind of emergency beacon so people can find you.
Right.
Because if you get the right pair of rollerblades, let me tell you, if you get those racing ones with the large wheels. So for those of you that don't know very much about rollerblades, they make the regular ones with the tiny wheels and then they make the pro versions. And the pro versions are the ones you want to go for. Don't go for those little wimpy tiny ones. All the girls are going to laugh at you if you show up. If you show up in your skin tight outfit with your spandex on and you have the tiny little rollerblade wheels, you're not getting any dates. You show up with the giant race wheels. But the problem is you can go from 0 to 60 on those things in about 3.4 seconds. Like that scene from Chevy Chase's Christmas Vacation where he puts that like oil on the bottom of the sled and then he goes down the hill and it lights like a flame because he breaks the sound barrier because he's going so fast. That's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of speeds I'm talking about on the rollerblades. But you look cool, Leander. So what you have to decide is a little pain worth looking as cool as you will be looking when you come around the corner?
Probably,
going 130 miles an hour on your racing rollerblades, unable to stop.
Right.
Waving your arms around in windmill fashion and screaming at the top of your lungs. And then hitting a tree and
dancing.
having a plume of leaves flying to the air.
Right, I know, yeah. Well, that's like the dancing over here in Golden Gate Park, like every weekend. Have you seen that recently, Lewis? You know, when they go the rollerblade dance club here?
No, rollerblade dance? I don't think I've ever seen it at all.
Really? It's like, you know where the Conservatory of Flowers is? It's just down from there a bit. There's like, they get loads of people, you know, dozens.
And they dance on their rollerblades?
Yeah, they all dance around on rollerblades. Yeah, it's like on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And you're recommending this, or are you trying to tell me to steer clear?
I would recommend it. It's kind of fun to watch for a while.
All right.
But there's a lot of windmilling going on there.
A lot of windmill dancing.
Well, that's how you dance, really, on a pair of rollerblades, you know.
You just windmill your arms around.
Right.
In fact, funny enough, that's the exact dance that Tim Cook did in that fitness video that he was filmed doing.
Yeah. He must be a rollerblader.
He was doing the windmill.
He's a rollerblader.
And then Eddie Q was doing the monster mash, the perpetual monster mash. He's like got his arms in the air like Frankenstein, although he wasn't trying to do the monster mash. I don't even think he knew he was doing the monster mash. But that's what he was doing. It was very creepy.
Was he really in that picture?
Yeah, he was off to the right.
No, come on.
I know because I use that video at the end of every one of my YouTube videos. That's like my signature sign off.
Huh.
And Eddie Q's yeah. there?
Yeah, oops, and he's literally on. Doing the Monster Mash. And then Tim Cook's doing the breaststroke. Or is that the call? No, that's not called the breaststroke, is
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, you're right. He is what's there.
Yeah, he's right there.
Oh, he's doing the Monster Mash. He is.
What? He does the mash.
He's got all the kinds of faces going on, too.
He's even doing the Franken face. You're right. Look how creepy he looks. Okay, look. Let's get back on track here.
Oh, my God.
We just wasted another 20 minutes.
Talking okay. about video, that makes for good audio.
Absolutely.
Phil Schiller's in there, too.
He is?
Yeah, on the left. Just at the very beginning, on the left.
How did I not
Who's
know? I'm embarrassed
there?
To say.
Phil Schiller. Yeah. And he's doing some weird clapping, like the old granddad he is.
I guess he's getting up there, isn't he? He's looking awful gray. And when he came out on stage, I thought, yeah, he's looking a little gray there, Phil.
All right. So, yeah, so
not
anyway, so
that there's anything wrong with that.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Going gray is the way to go, you know? Cool look. Okay, let's talk about ARM chips coming to the Mac. If there's anyone left, that is. If not, I'll just tell you guys.
Thanks.
Apple's ARM chips, like the A13 Bionic that powers the iPhone 11, they're blazing fast. You know that. And they're getting faster every year. They allow you to do tons of stuff on your iPhone that some laptops can't even do, like edit 4K videos on the go. And now they have console-quality gaming, especially with the iPhone 11 and its insanely powerful GPU. They are also incredibly efficient and designed to have as little impact as possible on battery life. And plus, it disconnects Apple from the Intel CPU cycle. You know, Intel, they're doing better now, but they had a lot of years where they just weren't really making any large improvements. And funny enough, now you have AMD, who just came out swinging, making some of the best processors that I've ever seen. Anyway, I digress. So Apple is trying to get off that Intel train and start making their own CPUs, their own system on a chip, and not be reliant on other people for their core components. And this is actually part of what Tim Cook's mission is at Apple, is creating their own components and not relying on other companies for the core components that Apple includes in their products. So that could mean that we could see a ARM chip come to a MacBook. It's powerful, it's incredibly efficient, and we know that a MacBook doesn't need to be a supercharged powerhouse computing machine, right? It just needs to be able to let you browse the internet, maybe do some light editing, that type of stuff. So, and it needs a lot of battery life. So I think this year is going to be the year we see the ARM-powered MacBook. And then also, we have the AR glasses on the way, Lewis.
Oh,
which
man.
I know you're going to wear over your normal glasses, right? Well, once those come out.
I don't know which one goes over which, but yeah.
That's a good point. Maybe your regular glasses go over the Apple. That would actually be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll go from four eyes to six eyes.
Well, my question is, what are the AR glasses going to do for me, Lewis? Why would I want to buy them?
Well, that's the big question, right? And according to this report, which says that they're supposed to come out and supposed to have holographic displays in their lenses and, you know, sync with the iPhone to display notifications. But the 2020 has been the year that they say that it's probably going to arrive. But this report is saying, hey, Apple still doesn't really know what the killer feature is that's going to make these AR glasses, you know, must-have devices. And yeah, honestly, if they don't come up with that, they might just hold them to keep the development continuing, you know, because, you know, they don't want to put this thing out there and go, yeah, here's these things, and we don't really know what to do with them.
Right. What's the marquee feature going to be? I keep saying that over and over again. What's the marquee feature going to be? What feature are these glasses going to have that are going to make you want to buy them? Maybe they'll auto-silence your notifications.
That would be killer, wouldn't it?
When you're looking at your screen during the cult cast.
Yeah, could you imagine something like
don't
that?
Don't get their pitchforks and torches and come to your house and try to murder you.
So Yeah, this has been the big thing. I mean, I've lately, more I think about this, there's some things that seem like this could be really awesome for. You know, obviously maps, if you're in a city you've never been in, and, you know, that would be awesome. But, you know, how often are you going to do that? How often are you in a city? You don't know where you're going or whatever on foot.
About all the time.
Yeah, maybe so. But supposedly Apple's is hiring experts in graphics and game development to establish the glasses as the leader in a new product category. And if all goes perfectly, an eventual successor to the iPhone. That's how Bloomberg framed
is pitching
this, right?
It? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's what that's their thing, you know, like, hey, Apple is hiring people to come up with this killer app, trying to figure out exactly what these are gonna be great for. So, you know, still a big if in everybody's estimation at this point, except for maybe Tim Cook, who probably just thinks it's awesome right now.
He's probably wearing them right now. He's probably immersed in some kind of AR world, and it's incredible. He's just there giggling, hanging out with all his AR friends.
I love the idea of glasses you could wear to a party, and everybody's name pops up, you know, one of these work parties.
That'd be helpful. That'd be helpful.
Yeah.
But they're going to need to do a whole lot more than that to get me to shell out the, I'm going to guess they're going to be $400 or $500 when they come out.
Oh, you know, is that all? Keep them.
I think they're going to be, yeah, probably like $500.
Really? That's all you think? I mean, yeah. What did Google Glass cost? Like $1,500 or something?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
they did.
You know, take a deep breath when you say $400 or $500.
$500 maybe. That's going to be with 2 gigs of RAM or 2 gigs of storage. If you want more than that, it's going to cost like $1,000. But yeah, but they also rely on your phone to do virtually all the computing. So really, you're just buying a device that's relaying stuff from your phone to a screen, which is essentially what the Apple Watch does. So maybe more, maybe $600. I don't know. Who knows how much that technology costs to actually manufacture?
Yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, I guess that's a big difference in the Google Glass stuff, huh? Because that was
Google Glass had a bunch of computer stuff built into it. Yeah. You know. And there have been some goggles that, well, they work both ways. There are AR goggles that have the computing built in, which is a lot more expensive. It's also heavier, creates heat, noise, that type of thing. And then there are devices that rely on some other kind of external computing device, so they're generally less expensive. But the big question is, I've done a lot of research around AR. The big question continues to be, what are they actually going to do that would make you want to buy them? Because AR is kind of esoteric, and it's even esoteric in a business sense. Like, businesses may buy them, but they're like, what exactly are we going to do with these? And right now they're positioned as devices that help you visualize and plan out factory floors, and then also to give your workers on the factory floor on-demand information about things that are happening. Like, let's say you were, I don't think Amazon does this, but this actually might be a cool application. You place an Amazon order, and then they go to fetch your order. That person's wearing glasses, right? AR glasses. And then you cancel your order. And Amazon is trying to cancel that order before it ships out, because they don't want you to reject the package, right, and cost them shipping. So they could display that heads up to the person right as they're getting it ready. I don't know. But business purposes seem to be where AR glasses are the most popular right now. So
I guess we should be following Robert Scoble. He's been running a lot about this. Like, this is his big next, you know, topic is like
Scobalizer? So, yeah. He's still going?
Oh, man.
I haven't heard that name in a long time. Wow.
Well, he was a big glasshole. Remember that? You know, the famous picture that kind of doomed the device when they took him when he was in the shower and he took a selfie.
I was just gonna say the last thing I remember about him is taking a picture in his shower, and I was like, yeah, I'm done.
Well, he's super into spatial computing. He just wrote a book about it, and he's always tweeting about it, and he's doing all this. And like, you know, he's convinced this is the next big frontier in computing. And I think he's looking at a lot of like work applications. You know, instead of sitting at a desk in front of a computer, you'll sit, you know, like in a chair, you know, facing the wall, and the computer screen will be, you know, in your glasses and AR, and you'll be able to like explore all these environments, and, you know, like, I think they've done word processing and, you know, spreadsheets and all this kind of collaborative software. I haven't dug really deeply into it, but I know that he's a really big booster of this stuff.
So there is AR for you, and that's all of the big products that we think are on the way in 2020. It's going to be a big year next year for sure. So save those ducats. Don't blow it all on the next Apple Watch. Don't blow it all on a floating DeLorean, which is unbelievable, by the way. I'm unboxing it right now. Oh, my gosh. I'm making the video on it.
You just
guys
got
would
it?
Not. I got it. But there's a long story, but I was unboxing it and I had to stop my unboxing because I could not figure out how to get this damn thing to float on the base. And then all of a sudden, poof, out of nowhere, it just started working flawlessly. Huh. So I was trying to figure out what was going on. So I had to like finish my review, but it's one of the coolest movie, I don't know if you call it a prop or a toy, one of the coolest movie memorabilia that I've ever seen.
Huh.
It's unbelievable. It's very cool. It's a 1/120th scale DeLorean. It has all of like the same parts as the regular DeLorean, and then you put it on the base and it literally hovers on the base. Man, that was an impulse buy, but one of my best impulse buys yet. I'll have this on my YouTube channel.
What did your wife say when
week.
She saw it?
Oh, she doesn't know.
Let's just say, hey, do you remember in Back to the Future 2 where Jennifer saw the DeLorean and then the doc had to like beam her forehead with that thing so she passed out? Let's just say I'm going to have to get one of those and do a memory wipe. She doesn't know about it yet, and that's the way I plan to keep it.
Luckily, she doesn't listen to this podcast. Right?
She wouldn't understand.
A few people would.
When you got to see it in person, and when you see it, it also comes with, I can't talk about it because I'm going to talk about it on the show once I release the video because there's more to it than what I just said. It's very cool. I'm just going to leave it right there. Okay. Let's go ahead and wrap up with an all new under review. This is a segment where we talk about the products that we're currently testing out, reviewing, what we like, what we don't. We could talk about, everything that is going on with the product. We haven't done this in a long time, so I think we all kind of have a small buildup of products here. But let's just do one. You know, let's not go into overdrive here. Let's not hit 88 miles per hour. launch into the future. We can do this again sometime soon. So, Lewis, why don't you take us away? Because you said you had a whole basket full of products to choose from. Why don't you take us away with one of the ones that you're testing out?
Well, I think in spite of your keen instructions, I'm going to have to talk about two because it's kind of a pair, kind of a set. Is that going to break you?
No, you're a rule breaker, and I respect that.
I'm a rebel. Yeah, I've got my hands on a couple things from Logitech, one of my favorite companies. A couple of Mac accessories. The first one's a mouse. It's called the MX Master 3.
They got a 3 out?
They've got a 3 out. And if you read Cult of Mac Daily, you'd know this. But anyway, I think it came out 2-3 weeks ago. Anyway, it's the latest version of Logitech's Pro Mouse. If you ever used one of these things, they're awesome mice. The marquee feature this time around is an electromagnetic scroll wheel. It's called the MagSpeed scroll wheel, and Logitech makes some pretty crazy claims about it. It says you can scroll 1,000 lines in a second, 90% faster than the other ones. And I don't know how in the world you would confirm those stats, but this thing is fast, and it switches on the fly from just scrolling normal to like speed demon mode. If you've got like a spreadsheet with a whole crap ton of lines in it, or even like in WordPress is what I use mostly. WordPress, and you're scrolling along. Some of these stories are long, and it's like, oh my gosh, you're scroll. But if you want to just go to the bottom, zing, doom, it's fast, very fast.
Wow.
So it's great for zipping through long web pages, things like that. Like the previous MX Master mice, it does it. To me, it feels incredibly precise. Works on any surface, including glass. And it also works with Logitech's options software, which, that's used with all these other mice that they have. That lets you program specific actions to the various buttons on this thing. It's got like, 7 or 8 buttons on it. That comes in really handy for certain things. I mean, I'm certainly not pushing this thing to its limits, right? I mean, it comes with custom presets for like Adobe Photoshop, Premiere Pro, Final Cut Pro, things like that. My most adventurous customization is making one of the buttons a triple click, because certain publishing things that I have to do, I have to do that all the time. And that'll burn your finger out doing that over and over. Ding, 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 ding. Right? And I just tap
burn
it.
Burn it right out.
Burn it.
You have to get it
right
amputated off.
Out. So, anyway, I think it's awesome. I mean, so the only problem with that was is that once in a while it gets squirrely, you know, and the mouse, the cursor jumps around a little bit. At this point, I'm you know, basically convinced this is either a Bluetooth problem or, you know, something with the MacBook itself. I've had this happen with other peripherals, not just Logitech peripherals. So once in a while, something just goes sideways, and it's maddening when it happens. And then, you know, no apparent reason, it disappears. So if anybody has any insight into that, I'd love to hear it. I've heard about different Bluetooth devices can sometimes cause interference and things like that. I don't know if you've ever
but
had
you
that
can
experience.
Use it with the Logitech's unifying receiver. Are you using that, or are you just using Bluetooth?
Well, I just using Bluetooth because, see, I got a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And I don't have a USB.
Oh, you don't have a USB. Well, what do you know? They don't put those on there, do they?
Right. Yeah, but yeah, those USB unifying receivers are awesome, actually.
I'm surprised that they don't include one in USB-C. I guess that's because
they haven't
PCs
done that yet, right?
USB-A. They should give you an option. They should make them in both models.
I'll bet that'll be their next. I bet the next thing they come with, you know, this thing charges with a USB-C cable, which is one of the first Logitech devices use that. And I such an upgrade. I mean, honestly, like, I love the USB-C.
Is it USB-C to USB-C? Is that the cable they include? Or is it USB-A,
no,
the old style
to
USB-C?
I think is what they include in the box. So
this is a sexy looking mouse too. I'm looking at it on Amazon right now.
Yeah, it's awesome. Whoa, it's very comfortable. It's very similar to the previous versions, but it's just great. You know,
does it still have the selector switch on the bottom so you can connect to different devices?
Yes, sir. You can connect to three different devices.
You gotta mention that. That's one of the best features on the mouse.
Okay. It's also got something called Flow, which is a Logitech thing that lets it move between different computers. I mean, if you had like two Macs, you could move the thing from one to the other just kind of automatically, or even a PC or a Linux box. I don't know. I don't have that kind of a setup, so I've never tested that either. But
whoa. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's
you can transfer cursor, text, and files across different OSs.
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it make you want one,
dude? I gotta get one. I'm holding an. I'll have you know.
I can't believe you guys are like so passionately discussing a mouse.
Oh, dude, a good mouse.
I haven't used
really
a mouse in about 10 years.
You trackpad people, I don't know.
Yeah, I would never go back to a mouse.
I love the trackpad. Well, I love the trackpad on my Mac, but if I'm not on a Mac, which I'm often not, then I have to use a mouse. And one of the things I love about the Master Mouse, in fact, I'm holding one right now. I'm holding the original Master Mouse in my very strong and capable hand at this very moment. And I love being able to just press a button on the mouse and then switch from computer to computer. That's immensely useful. And I mainly use it on my PCs because I like my trackpad so much. But I might have to get myself one of these. It's only $100, but it's not shipping for 1 to 2 months, which makes my heart sad.
Oh, really?
That's what it says on Amazon. They probably just came out.
Yeah, you can get it for Logitech, I think, right now.
They sent it to you first. They sent it to you first.
Yeah, sorry about that, dude. So,
okay,
the
what's
second
the other
product
one?
Is a keyboard that goes along with it. It's called MX Keys. Makes sense, right? Slim metal keyboard, feels really great underneath your fingers. You know, this is no butterfly keyboard. This thing is buttery. It's awesome. Logitech calls it Perfect Stroke Keys. I don't really like that name.
Oh, hey now.
I don't know who came up with that. But anyway, they do feel awesome. And, you know, they've got little, like, concave surface on the surface of the keys, you know, and they feel really good. excuse me, aside from the sweet keys, the other big feature on this thing is backlighting, okay? It's got backlighting, but it's not just on or off backlighting. It's got these proximity sensors that notice when your hands approach the keyboard and turn on the backlighting, and it also adjusts, like, the level of lighting, you know? Like if it's a moderately dark room, it's dimmer light. If it's all dark, it's brighter. So it's not the most interesting looking keyboard, you know. Industrial design is, you know, it's fine.
I think it looks nice.
Yeah, I mean,
I wish they would have got rid of the number pad, honestly. I hate it when they put number pad.
Really? Some people love the number pad, you know?
I don't use it, so I just think it's superfluous and unnecessary, which are the same things, I realize.
Yeah.
so just chop it off. Give me a small, compact little keyboard that I can have in front of me that has full-size keys. I'm in love.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't mind having the numbers. Yeah, it's really stable on your desk. It's very, you know, it's really, it's a good feeling keyboard. I've had the same, like, a squirrely thing going on where suddenly the left and right cursors weren't working. I'm just wondering how much of that is, like, Catalina or whatever. I mean,
it could be. Yeah.
So many things are not working right on my devices right now. My iPad Pro, I'm like pressing on icons and apps aren't loading. It's like, what's going on, man? They got to.
Yeah, iOS 13's buggy too.
They got some things they need to work out, and I'm not willing to say that it's a problem with the keyboard. I don't think it is because it works perfectly almost all the time. Overall, those two items make a great pair. I think they're. I personally think way superior to the peripherals that Apple ships with iMac. And as you point out, $99 for the mouse, $99 for the keyboard. They also have like a, you know, a wrist rest you can get for an extra $20 if you must. But that's what I got.
Okay, those are good. Yeah, that's some good stuff right there. I might have to get my hands on that mouse. Okay, let me go next, and then LK, you can take it home. I've been reviewing. If you thought. We got excited about mice, Leander. Just wait. I'm gonna be talking about some routers. I know that you love yourself some routers. I'm gonna take it up a notch, up a sexiness level with some router talk. So get the kids to leave the room. Here we go. The TP-Link M9 Plus Mesh Routers. I've been testing these out for months now. Boy, they are great. Mesh routers, so they all speak to each other, right? And the idea is that you can set them all throughout your house or your compound or your property. And then as you move from space to space, your phone will just seamlessly connect to the one that is closest to you. And then the routers talk to each other and give you fast transfer speeds and great coverage no matter where you are. And these things work great. So first of all, the changing from node to node, it just happens quickly and seamlessly. So no matter where you go, there's no time gap where you're walking away from a router to another room and then you're still connected to the router that's actually farther away and not connected to the one that's closer to you. Like as soon as you cross over the threshold where you're closer to one of the routers than the other, it will just automatically connect you to the new one. It happens almost instantly. I've never noticed it not being connected to the router that was closest to me. And you can tell because your signal drops when that happens. So maybe it's happening, but my signal's not dropping. But anyway, really quick, seamless switching. And also a unique feature on these routers are Ethernet backhaul. So my property is very long, and I have a router at the front of my house, a router at the back of my house, and then at the back of my property is where Cultcast Command Center is. And normally you would have a little less speed between, well, let me rephrase that. Normally where I'm sitting now would have slower speeds because it would be connected wirelessly to a router that's inside the house, which is not close to the structure I'm in now. But these routers allow you to do something called Ethernet backhaul. So I actually connected the node that I have in the command center here to the node that is connected to my actual fiber at the front of the house. So I'm not even connected via Wi-Fi on this node. I'm connected via Ethernet. So my computer connects wirelessly to the node next to me, and the node connects via Ethernet backhaul to the main node that is connected to the fiber. So you get really fast connection between these two nodes. And then I have another one in the middle of my house that just connects wirelessly because it's pretty close to the node at the front of my house. So it's a unique feature being able to connect these different nodes via Ethernet if you want to, which gives you basically wired speed. You can get your fastest wireless speed possible because the nodes are connected via wires. And then also, a very polished app, and Apple Watch app as well. So you can have ample control of the settings, quality of service, permissions, schedules, port forwards, all this stuff in the iPhone app, which is beautifully designed. It's easy to use. And it gives you control to a lot of stuff within the router settings that you don't always get with these types of mesh routers, because they kind of tune them to be easy, like user-friendly, easy to use, but you don't get any power features. And this gives you a nice mix between power features and ease of use. And it also has an Apple Watch app that will give you notifications when things are happening on your network. So like, if you join my network right now, I wouldn't let you guys join, no way. And one of our listeners came over, I'd probably let them join, but you two guys, not a chance.
Probably wise.
But if one of our listeners came over, I'd let them join, and it would ping my watch and say, nice, attractive listener 001 has joined your Wi-Fi network. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of handy to see what's going on your network and get those kind of notifications in case it says, Alex E. Heath just attempted to join your Wi-Fi network. Approve or reject. I'm like, reject, 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 right? Like,
have you ever gotten like a weird person trying to get onto your network?
No, because my Wi-Fi security, it's buttoned up. And my password is one that you'd have to waterboard me to get it. There's no way you'd ever guess it. And even if you waterboarded me, I still wouldn't give it to you, Lewis.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I lost my spot. Oh, okay. The other big one is the M9 Plus acts as a hub for your smart devices. So you can use it as a replacement hub for like your Philips Hue lights or any other Zigbee type devices. It pairs with Alexa, IFTTTTTTT. I can never remember how many T's are in there. And so it can talk to all your different smart devices. Then you can use the app on your iPhone to schedule different automation with your accessories and stuff. Man, we should do another HomeKit automation type show sometime, Lewis.
Yeah.
I've got some automation going on now that you wouldn't believe. It's just, I've hacked the system. It's like Jeff Goldblum in
The Fly,
that 4th of July movie. No. Not in The Fly, Lewis. What's the Independence Day when he is flying in that spaceship and he has his Mac and he hacks into the alien computer central system and he uploads the virus?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
like
that's remember like you, that huh? scene.
That's like me now with HomeKit. I'm in there. I'm hacking. I'm cracking. I'm shellacking. Everything is just working exactly how I want it to. I have things based on certain conditions. Like if my motion sensors detect you, it will churn on certain. Anyway, we could do a whole show on this.
What does it do?
It's impressive. If you show up to my house between certain times, it will turn on all the lights in different parts of my house and the structure so that you think there's someone there, or so that scares you off, right? So you know that you're being monitored. Something's going on. Because if you're walking up to a house and you're about to rob it, all of a sudden all the lights come on and different conditions start happening, you'd probably think twice whether or not in there.
Do you have these cutout silhouettes, you know, in front of the window that start moving around and paint cans start dumping out on people's heads? And
it goes, ooh, ooh.
Put a mannequin on a Roomba and have it go toward right, the window.
Exactly. So you've got full McCulkin, right? Full wacko, Home Alone.
Merry Christmas, you dirty animals. Yeah, I got a smoke machine, a HomeKit-enabled smoke machine, and then a spotlight, and it's a cardboard cutout of Dirty Harry with a cigar in his mouth, and you're just like, ah! And then you just run away.
It just pops up out of the bushes. Make exactly. my day.
And then I've got a HomeKit-powered minigun, you know, like the one in Terminator 2. Anyway.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'd be interested in hearing about all these HomeKit automations.
It's pretty cool. It's gotten to be a lot more powerful, and also Apple has enabled HomeKit adoption via software updates. So, like my Arlo security cameras have adopted HomeKit support now because they were able to do it with just a software update. So now those connect into your HomeKit. So it's pretty cool what you can do with HomeKit now. There's a lot of automation. I mean, the automation is where the fun happens, right? You can set all these different times a day for things to happen and things to turn on, things to turn off. You can set things whether someone's home or coming home or leaving or if you want them to leave. I mean, there's just all sorts of crazy stuff.
Has it been proven to be robust? Has it stuck, you know, or does it break down all the time?
It virtually never misfires. The only thing that misfires that doesn't work perfectly that I've experienced so far are my Arlo cameras with the geofencing. I can't tell you how many times I have set those things to geofencing mode, and then I get home and I don't realize that they haven't disarmed, and I go into my house and I'm frightened out of my underpants when the decibels, when it's like 155 decibel alarm turns on, and I'm like scared to death, you know, because I am like, anyway. So that's the only thing, really. Well, but other than that, like the actual HomeKit stuff.
The only thing wrong is that the alarm freaks out every single time.
Well, you could turn that off. You could turn that off. So I have it set to schedule most of the time. So it turns on at certain times of day and off at certain times of day. So that doesn't, I don't accidentally trigger anymore. But the geofencing stuff can be a little bit iffy. Quirky. And maybe in all HomeKit stuff, it can be a little bit iffy. Mm. I haven't totally tested that out. All
right, cool.
I think that is it. So that's the TP-Link M9 Plus. I think they're actually pretty affordable. I think the three-pack is $180.
That's not a bad price. I'll check on that. Really.
I don't think so.
They're all coming down in price now anyway. Aero, because after it got bought by Amazon, is a lot cheaper than it used to be.
I forgot about that. That's going to be really interesting to see what Amazon does with that. They're probably going to integrate it with like the Ring stuff, because right. Amazon owns Ring security cameras now, which I really want to test out. I've heard really nice things about the Ring security cameras. I've actually never used one. But, okay, Leander, take us home.
All right, okay. Well, I'm going to be quick. I've got a new iPhone case for my iPhone 11 Pro Max, and it's from Grovemade. It's a wooden case made out of wood and leather. So it's like a bumper case, like a plastic bumper case, but it's actually made out of really nice walnuts. And these things are really beautifully constructed, you know, like it's really, really well put together. It has like, the thing I like the most is the little wooden buttons. It has these little wooden buttons for the home button and for the volume sliders up and down. Uh-huh. And then, of course, it's a folio case, so it has a leather a cover that goes on the back and the front. And it folds over, and it's got room for a couple of cards, and you can put some money in there. Not much. I mean, you couldn't really put a lot of stuff in there, but it's a really nice, really, really well-made, really, really nice-looking case. It's already kind of like a little bit scuffed up, the leather, but you know that's what you want, right? It takes on that patina, that used look. You know, it'll start to, really look worn, which I'm kind of looking forward to seeing. And you can fold the screen down, so it'll act as a stand if you want to prop the phone up. The one downside is that this isn't, you know, like if you drop it, there's a good chance the case will break.
Yeah.
Because it's made out of wood.
It's a one-time protection thing, right? It's like, it protects your phone, but just the once.
It's like an airbag.
we'll see. I had one of their ones, one of their bumper cases before, and I really liked it. It lasted a long time. It was actually surprisingly durable.
Huh.
And I have high hopes for this one. You know, like I said, it is really well made. So we'll see how long it lasts. It does have, you know, it may be a bit vulnerable. We'll see. But Grove. Sorry, go on.
I was just looking at their website. It's hilarious. They got a disclaimer on there. Our cases are not for everyone. Please visit our iPhone case buyer's guide to learn if a Grove made case is right for you.
Right, and that's what they
That's hilarious. I'm looking at that right
that's
now.
That's why they put a disclaimer that this thing, you know, is going to break.
Huh.
If you drop it.
Oh, yeah, and the top bullet point is you can live with a case that might break if you drop your phone. Well, okay, you know.
Then. Hey, no risk, no reward. Advertising is good.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, at least they told you.
Right.
There you go. Exactly. I do like that they have an actual honest-to-goodness bumper case here. Those are rare. You never see bumper cases anymore. The only other true bumper case I know of is the Rhino Shield Crash Guard NX, which I'm using right now. Baby, what a nice case it is. Oh my gosh. It just keeps getting better. They keep improving it every year, and this is a nice one. Anyway, okay,
you know what, one thing I just wanted to add, the thing I like the best about this is the wrapping, the packaging of this, of it. It comes wrapped in sort of
looks like butcher paper.
Yeah, butcher paper, like wax paper, with a little sticker. And I frankly think it's fantastic. You know, I don't feel guilty about chucking that stuff out. I don't feel guilty about all the plastic, you know, waste that if it had been in sort of traditional packaging.
You didn't slice your finger trying to get it open.
No, right, exactly. And it's distinctive. It was very distinctive and very sort of tactile and pleasing.
And the nice thing is if you ever drop your phone and the case breaks, you can just put it in the really nice paper and carry it around like that.
That's a backup
case.
Because
they use paper as like packing material, right? So it's like a natural fit.
Exactly. Exactly.
There you go. All right, cool. Well, I will include links to everything in the show notes. If you guys want to check out any of the fine products we mentioned on today's show, you can find those all in the show notes. I think we should go ahead and wrap it up there. I'm looking at the timer, and it says we've been going for 4.5 hours now. So I think that's about all the Cultcast that I can handle. I don't even care about you guys anymore. That's all the Cultcast that I can handle. So that's all the Cultcast we're going to have for you guys. This week, if you want to have us review a product that you've heard about or are interested in, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at Arifon. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. Leander is at L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Misophonia test?
That was me just cleansing my palate. You know?
Oh, I see.
Why is that one of the most annoying sounds that there is? I don't know. My dog does it too sometimes.
I guess it's genetic. I heard something.
You think so? You think I got a problem with the genetic level is what you're telling me.
No,
it can't even be addressed.
I just heard something today that misophonia, there's like they identified a gene that says, I don't know, that makes you susceptible to it.
Check, 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 check. Hello, hello.
Hello, Governor.
Hello, Governor. It's like taking a time machine back and hearing one of your distant relatives talking to you.
It is.
Hello, Leander.
But it was back at the Renaissance Fair, you know, the Dickens Fair.
Did you ever go to that?
Years ago.
That'd be pretty cool.
My brother was a fanatic. He used to get dressed up and
your brother, sure.
No, really. It's kind of fun because you could get drunk. They served a lot of booze.
Oh, is that why it was fun? Yeah. That's hilarious.
It's the only reason I got a Chuck E. Cheese, you know?
I haven't been to a Chuck E. Cheese in a long time. Did they still let you in?
Well, not without a kid.
Yeah, they frown when you come by yourself.